if I got up late. So thank you. Thank you very much, Imre. It's certainly been very stimulating to be at the workshop. I'm just sorry that I'll have to leave at the end of the week, but it's been a very, very good conference. So this is work that I've been doing over the last few years in collaboration with Pascal Biot and his students, Hector Gomard, in Paris. Most of the work was done there while I was on visiting them. So we're generally trying to develop a program that will allow us to examine granular systems composed of non-spherical particles. And as we all know, this is really the default situation, in fact, that most granular systems contain some asphericity. And these are some typical examples showing a prolate and here an oblate form of something that's approximated by an ellipsoid, where the elongation or the anisotropy is quite marked. But even in other cases, here's some shot used for shot peening. These are obviously irregular, not completely spherical. So we could say that it is really worthwhile to try and understand the basic behavior of these systems. And trying to build on work that was done a number of years ago, primarily by Mike Allen and Dan Frenkel, who developed codes to simulate hard ellipsoids and other non-spherical particles in equilibrium systems. And they observed all kinds of interesting phenomena like different kinds of liquid crystalline phases and so on. So the capability or the algorithms are there to perform the molecular dynamics type simulations. Well, and we wanted to start off in a very simple way. So we first considered really the simplest possible system that maybe has one non-spherical particle. And we were inspired by this work or this system that in fact has been studied by several people, starting with Martin and Piasecki and the others listed below are just a few of the groups that have studied. And we heard last week Javier Bray also talk about this kind of problem. So the system is the following, that we're going to take one intruder particle, obviously the blue one here, and we're going to immerse it in a bath of particles. And we'll assume that this bath of particle is thermalized and velocity distribution follows the Maxwell form. Okay, so this is given by the model, and the temperature of this will be fixed at TB. So the question then is, what is the velocity distribution of the intruder particle, right, when the intruder particle collides inelastically with the bath particles with a coefficient of restitution alpha less than one. Okay. So we tackled this problem in two ways. I'll take you very briefly through a very simple way to recover the result of Martin and Piasecki. And this will set the background for the event-driven simulations that we also did. So if we focus on purely a one-dimensional situation first, so we have a granular surface moving with a velocity u, right? We want to ask, what is the flux of colliding particles of bath particles on this surface? And we can derive an exact expression for this, again, involving the area function here that depends on the velocity of the surface. And this should be, I guess, the bath temperature here, TB. So then we could ask, what is this then is the total rate of collisions on this surface. You can also ask, what's the probability that a collision will occur on either the left or the right-hand side? That's simply given by the ratio of the two fluxes. All right, and then we can write down a simple kinetic equation here that gives us the evolution of the tracer particle velocity distribution function, right, in terms of these here. This is just the last term results from tracer particles with velocity u, right, that collide with bath particles that remove that velocity. And here's the generation term, right, where this function here is the rate that intruder particles moving with the velocity v are converted into tracer particles with velocity u, right? And it's fairly easy to write down what that is. It just involves the bath particle velocity distribution function and this delta function here that selects from the colliding particles those that convert an intruder particle moving with velocity v into one moving with the velocity u, right? This is all straightforward. And it's just going to be consistent with the result that we saw before, that was derived before, sorry. So in the steady state, then this thing will be zero, and we have this simple, or fairly simple result here, right? And then this actually then has this solution, right, for the tracer particle distribution function, right? We see that it is exactly a Maxwellian distribution, but the temperature is different from the Bath temperature, okay? And its exact value is given by this expression here, which was first obtained by Martin and Piasecki in 1999, right? So this is always lower than one, right? When with the coefficient of restitution is smaller than one. Right. We had some interesting discussions with John Huntley about whether this really is a physically plausible or realistic state for the system, right? Could this really exist in steady state? Whereby the tracer particle has a temperature, even though it's a granular temperature, lower than the Bath temperature, right? Is that reasonable? There are certain objections to it, and maybe we can discuss that some more time. But what we could at least do is to treat it more empirically and say if we have an intruder particle in a Bath of particles. Usually the distribution of the Bath particle velocities is going to be approximately Maxwellian, all right, and that can be parameterized by the temperature TB, all right, and then if the collisions with the intruder particle are inelastic, then this treatment should at least give us, you know, a first approximation for what's going on in that system. All right, so then we needed to do that really to construct these event-driven simulations, which most people are familiar with. So we won't spend too long on it, but the system, instead of evolving with fixed time steps, just moves from one event to the next, which in this case are collision events, right? And to generate the waiting time distribution, we just use this simple exponential waiting distribution, where R is the rate that events are taking place in the system. And here, of course, this is just the flux, the total flux of colliding particles on the surface, which in this case is a constant between the collisions. That's going to be important later on when I tell you about the non-spherical particles. So that is not true then in those situations, right? We do need to be careful, of course, when taking the average of dynamical quantities in these kinds of simulations. We shouldn't take the average over the collisions, all right? But we do need to take the average at equally spaced time intervals. And that has the following, well, I'll show you shortly what the result is. And then the algorithm is very simple. We just generate a random waiting time here using this and then decide whether the collision is on the right or the left by generating a second random uniform number. Okay. Then here's the result just confirming the formula that I showed you. All right, the simulation shown with symbols and the theory, which is of course exact in this result, confirms here. And then if we take the collision averages, we get quite different results. Okay, so moving on then quickly to the non-spherical particle. Again, this is the simplest possible system that we could construct. It is a needle, it's in an infinitely thin needle, and it's in a bath of point particles. All right, so of course, a moment's thought shows that we need to restrict this to a two-dimensional system, right? Because if the needle's in three dimensions, then we will never have any collisions with point particles.
In maybe I missed it. Do you have real small particles, or do you just have a stochastic procedure for colliding the small particles with the
left? A stochastic procedure for sliding.
So, in effect, the small collisions are ignored?
Yes, correct.
The small
collisions would be collisions between two red particles here, for example, which we're really treating as point particles. At this level of the analysis, we are going to extend that later to have finite size Bath particles as well, right? But just think,
in both cases, the small species is very dilute.
Yes, this is infinitely dilute, right? It's just like the model that Javier was telling us about last week. This is only one of these, the density of this would be specified.
I'm trying to simplify. Yeah. Yeah. You're simulating the Boltzmann equation.
Yeah, well, yes, we're actually doing both.
It's not by
simulation
recovery.
It's not.
This was a Gillespie algorithm.
I'm not aware of that algorithm. This is something that we came up with ourselves.
Whenever you have the stochastic process and its rates, Then you can make a reference simulation to this for the SPL.
Okay.
Why do you say that there's no collisions in three dimensions? It looks like in three dimensions every plane would look just like this.
No, but if the needle is infinitely thin and the points are infinitely thin, then they'll actually never collide. Right? It's a set of zero measure, the points of contact in three dimensions.
The diagram lies, it's particles and points.
Yeah. Actually, I did say that, right? It's an infinitely thin needle and it's a point. Sorry?
The line cannot pass through a point.
In two dimensions, but in three dimensions, there's no risk because the needle isn't constrained to a plane in three dimensions, right? The points could pass by either side.
You mean there are some trajectories, but...
Well, many, all trajectories, basically, yes.
Okay, I guess...
That's right, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, so anyway, we need to bear in mind these parameters that characterize the system, right? The length of the needle, the moment of inertia, and the normal restitution coefficient. Then we can write down the collision equations. Notice that we're taking the tangential restitution coefficient here to be minus one, right? So this is a smooth surface on the needle that could be extended, but we took the simplest choice to start with. And then here's the equation for the change in momentum of the needle resulting from the collision. All right, so the kinetic theory is straightforward, really. I mean, it's been used before in other applications. This is the pseudo-Liouville equation for the two-particle distribution function of the needle, which uses the subscript 1, and the Bath particles here. And this shows how the single particle distribution function for the needle evolves, all right, as an integral, a collision integral of the two particle distribution function. Now the assumption then of the model is that this thing can be factored into the one particle distribution function and the distribution of the Bath particle velocities, which by assumption is Maxwellian. All right, so the analysis then is again fairly straightforward. Is that we write down an expression for the rate of change of the translational kinetic energy and the rotational kinetic energy, right, involving the two-particle distribution function and the collision operator, which I'll specify in a minute, and the translational and rotational energy of the needle, right? So if there is a steady state, then these derivatives should be zero, and we'll have two simultaneous equations that we have to satisfy. In fact, we can show that the Maxwell distribution can't be the exact steady state for the needle translational and angular velocities, right? But since we can't solve it analytically, we will use it as a trial function anyway. Okay? And as you'll see, that turns out to be a very reasonable thing to do. Okay, so then to complete the analysis, we just have to specify the collision operator for the needle, which is obviously a bit more complicated than for a sphere. It contains the same kind of elements, right? The first two terms impose the contact condition on the collision. The second is the flux of Bath particles to the needle surface. And then we have a Heaviside function to say that the particles have to be moving together. And finally, a very important term here, which will give us the difference between the pre and the post collisional quantities. All right, so we take this and then substitute it in these state equations that I had on the previous slide and just work through some algebra, and these are the results. Get two simultaneous equations, basically for these quantities A and B, which are related to the rotational and translational temperatures of the needle. Right, this is rather technical. We don't need to dwell on this too long, probably. And then we also perform the event-driven simulations to compare the kinetic theory result with. And again, now the complication is that the flux depends, of course, on where we are on the length of the needle. It also depends on the rotational speed, the angular velocity of the needle. And the complication is then that the between collisions, the flux is not constant, okay, because of the needle is rotating. So we actually need to modify slightly the expression for the weight and time distribution. It now involves an integral over the time-varying flux. But all this can be done. And here then we're showing the results. for the translation and rotational temperatures, the event-driven simulation compared with the kinetic theory, you see the agreement is excellent. And we can see right away that we don't have equipartition with the bath temperature. And moreover, the translational temperature in this case is always slightly larger than the rotational temperature. Okay. For this particular choice of the moment of inertia here, which corresponds to a uniform mass distribution along the length of the needle. We can actually enhance the difference between the temperatures by taking a non-uniform moment of inertia, right, where this corresponds to concentrating a bit more mass in the center than at the ends. Okay, and then if we look at the actual velocity distributions, comparing the assumed Maxwell trial function with the event-driven simulations, again, the agreement is excellent. You can't really distinguish anything at this level of accuracy of the simulation.
Can I just clarify again what Robin said? I mean, is the event-driven simulation simulating just exactly the same thing that your equation?
No, the key difference is, I should really stress that, is in order to get an analytic result from the kinetic theory, is that we have to make the assumption that the angular and translational velocities of the needle obey the Maxwell distribution, right? Mm-hmm. But the event-driven simulation does not assume that. It assumes that the bath particles that are colliding with the needle have a Maxwell distribution, but not the needle itself. So we're not doing exactly the same thing.
Okay, so if we did molecular dynamics, we may not get the same answer.
As what?
As what you find.
The theory of the simulation.
In the simulation.
Well, we should, as long as the there aren't correlations between the bath particles.
Well, I'm just wondering here, because it seems like, you know, for thermal systems, if you neglect the memory, the spatial and temporal memory in the bath,
yes.
It's still not too bad. You can still basically get the Boltzmann distribution. But in a dissipative system like this, aren't you setting up basically an energy sink where that particle is? So
this bath is not dissipative.
Right.
But if you were to do a real MD, then it would be. So you have a little, you'd start to create a local area where it's cooler than it is.
Exactly. Yes. Right. That's true. Yes.
Well, just as a comment, I think there's a peculiarity of this system where the bath is not dissipative, but a particle is. In the spherical case that you mentioned, Piasecki, there is an exact solution for the Tegg particle, which is Maxwellian. So it's a peculiarity that you still get Maxwellian.
Yes.
Even
yes.
The restitution coefficient for
right.
The bath particle
yes.
Is not usually.
Yes. I mean, well, whenever you have non-sphericity, you can show rigorously that the stationary state distribution is not Maxwellian. It can't be exactly Maxwellian.
Yeah, but picking up David's point.
Yeah.
In two dimensions,
yes.
Not worried about three dimensions, but in two dimensions, you do have an issue that your intruder is a heat sink.
Yes.
And therefore, if the mean free path in the bath, in as much as the mean free path in the bath is finite, you have a temperature profile established in the bath, and
yes.
That's pretty harmless in the three-dimensional case, but in the two-dimensional case, there are logarithms, which...
Yeah, well, we do plan to do molecular dynamic simulation where we have a fairly dense bath particles to see exactly what effect that assumption has.
But I claim it's only a serious issue in two dimensions. In 3D, the spreading distance to the point is finite.
Okay.
It just depends. I mean, it would just affect the local temperature of the bath because there's obviously there has to be some heat flux coming in, so it shouldn't really matter.
It'll affect your net temperature.
Sure. But you could do that. The ratio would then be between the local temperature of the bath after you've accounted for the heat flux.
And also, the heat flux distribution is no longer Maxwellian in the bath particle case.
Right.
The flux is a thermal distribution.
Yeah,
but
that would be small variation.
Well, we're talking about small effects,
yeah.
But
yeah.
You can't calculate it.
Everything
around.
Makes
the
result not exact.
Yeah, I mean, we acknowledge that our treatment is fairly simplistic, but we are introducing rotational degrees of freedom, perhaps for the first time in this kind of treatment. Okay, so we wanted then to move on and look at a finite object rather than the infinitely thin needle. So this is. What I actually tried to call a disco rectangle, but the editor objected to the name disco rectangle. And in the paper, you'll see that it's actually called a capped rectangle. Okay. Anyway, it should be obvious in both cases really what it is, right?
I'm with the editor.
I assume the editor isn't here.
He's not going to sex that.
Anyway. So this is considerably more complicated, really, this system right now, because we have the possibility for two different kinds of collisions. In the needle point system, there's only one kind of collision where the point collides with the edge, the length of the needle. All right, but here, of course, we can have a collision with the rectilinear part or the capped ends of the object. And in general, we assume that these are characterized by different coefficients of restitution, right? Although we don't know, if anyone can help us with this, really exactly how the coefficient of restitution should depend on the point of contact, you know, for a non-spherical particle. But at the moment, we just use two different values for the side and the ends in general. All right, so we do the same kind of thing, exactly the same kind of analysis. The equations are more complicated. Just showing part of the solution. These things here are kind of integrals, which are detailed in the paper, but solution method is the same as with the needles. And we get similar results. Here we take the two restitution coefficients of the same. Right, this shows one sample result where we're looking at the effect of the mass ratio of the disco rectangle to the Bath particle, right? And we see that for very light Bath particles, we do recover equipartition between translation and rotation in the limit, in that limit. More interesting, though, is of course the situation where we have different values of the coefficients of restitution at the end and the sides. Okay, and here's one case where we took alpha 1 is a half along the edge of the object, and then vary alpha 2. And of course, now the key thing is that for a particular value of alpha 2, we do get equipartition between translation and rotation. Right? Then we can try to build a map varying alpha 1 and alpha 2 to show where equipartition occurs below. Above the red line, the rotational temperature is larger than the translation, and below it's smaller. Then we can do this for different values of the length of the disco rectangle. And we know this actually for more elongated objects, then there's a rather smaller region where it's possible to have a larger rotational temperature than the translational temperature. All right. Then we can do the same now in this case, varying the radius of the Bath particle, right? And again, we get a considerable variation here when we do that. All right, so this is then the summary. And we expect, of course, these results to really be general in any dimension. The analysis was specifically in two dimensions. But for finite-sized non-spherical particles in any dimension, we should get qualitatively the same behavior. And we hope that someone will be able to try to verify some of these predictions experimentally. Okay, thank you.
So let me, as an experimentalist, pick up on your last line. If I tried to do this in 2D, I mean, I can imagine doing it with an air table or something like that. But I can't create a bath of dissipational particles. So then the question is, what happens if you now make your particles in bath, non-ideal particles? How much is that going to do? If I put in even a very good restitution coefficient of 0.9,
yes.
What's going to happen?
Well, presumably, if you can still describe the Bath particle velocity distribution with a Gaussian, right? This analysis should still be valid, right? even though they are dissipating. It should provide a first principle, a first estimate anyway for that ratio.
And that is the case for spherical particles. So if you approximate the Bath by Maxwellian, I think Christine's simulation, where are you, Christine?
think there might be some complication with contact laws for non-spherical particles, because I understand it with certain shapes, you can't use a coefficient of restitution, because it won't, even, you can actually create energy by imposing the velocities come away like that. Well, so normally, you know, if you take your normal velocities and you reverse them with a coefficient of restitution, and then you put that back as an impulse on the particles, it doesn't conserve energy. It could actually create energy depending on the geometry. If they're not, so it's a fine for certain shapes, but it breaks down for certain shapes of ellipsoids, for example. So you need something more complicated.
Mm-hmm. Show me a reference or something. Mm-hmm. Or showing the arguments of the truth to hear it. Yeah.
I was curious about your comment that the Hatcher-Boltzmann form is not an exact solution to the kinetic equation of rotation. Is that true even when alpha equals 1?
No, of course, if anything is true when alpha equals 1.
Yes, so
yes.
Only deviation.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I think, you know, yes, it is true.
The notion that having different coefficients of restitution at the ends and the sides, of course, makes some sense for non-spherical particles. But has anyone considered that process for spherical particles as well? Just imagining that certain parts of the surface have different restitution than others, because you may get structures then form that are non-isotropic. Has that been considered, this group here that likes to do this stuff?
Nothing.
Seems like a nice, simple kind of problem. You just put a, now you have a directionality. It's still a spherical particle. It's still made in the symmetry of that geometry, the simplicity of that. But nonetheless, now you have a directionality associated with each particle, and you might find some interesting things happening.
I think you just get an average coefficient of restitution.
You don't think anything happen in high densities? Why not?
I don't think so. I think that it's going to be all mixed up,
you know, in terms of the rotation.
Even at high densities, Jim?
I think.
Dilute would be, I would agree with you, but.
Well, you didn't have even more collisions at high densities. I don't know. Let's talk about it.
You say there's small deviations from Gaussian. Do you have simulation evidence of departures from Gaussian?
Not in this system. Right. People do see deviations from Gaussians. You know, they let the computations run for days and days, and you know, at high
single
ranges.
Single intruder in Gaussian background.
That I don't know.
But you should be able to calculate the equivalence from your analysis. Yeah?
Yes.
Okay, so
yes. But you could see from those graphs that, you know, clearly it's going to be hard to see. I mean, it'd be, right, be really surprising. Visually, you can't. Really no apparent deviation at all, and we're going quite into the tails. This is a live plot, right? So.
Well, that's why I asked the question.
Yeah.
Should you say the Gaussian, a pure thermal trial, which is a bit more restrictive than Gaussian, does not solve the equation of motion?
No. Except in the elastic case.
Yeah. Only doesn't solve the equations of motion, even in the case where your temperature calculation is separate partition.
That's an interesting point.
I've no particular reason to believe that we say that.
Yeah. Good suggestion.
So let's thank our speaker again.